Welcome to the Shir in Pirkei Avos. The Shir this evening is sponsored by Talula Mendelowitz, marking the yahrzeit tonight of her father, Harav Binyamin ben Harav Yitzchak Leibamrin, Zichrono Livracha, Neshama Shel Aven Aliyah, and should see much nachas ruach in the Torah mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim that the entire family is involved in. We begin tonight taking a look at Pirkei Avos, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Chof Aleph, Chapter 3, Mishnah 21, and the Hebrew-English Sidurim, it's page 562 or 563, depending on whether you're following in the Hebrew or the English. This Mishnah introduces one of the Tanoim by the name of Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah. And Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah is going to share with us a thought in this Mishnah, and he's going to be the author of the next Mishnah, Mishnah Chof Beis, Mishnah 22 as well. Who is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? So the Gemara that primarily gives us some insight into the history of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is a famous Gemara. Again, famous means that we've heard of it, so hopefully by the time that we finish tonight we'll have heard of it, so it'll be famous. Famous Gemara in the fourth parak of Brachos and Tfilas HaShachar, where the Gemara tells us that Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah had, as they say, ala milus. He had everything going for him. He had yichus. The Mishnah says, the Gemara says over there that he was asiri le'ezra. He was a 10th generation descendant of Ezra HaSofer. So it doesn't get much more miyuchasdik than that. He was an ashir, a wealthy person. The Rambam tells us that not only did he come from wealthy stock, but at least in the case of his father, it was a wealthy family that valued Torah learning tremendously. The Mishnah beginning of Masechet Zvachim quotes an individual by the name of Shimon Achi Azariah, Shimon the brother of Azariah. And it's a little bit of a strange way to designate somebody. Usually you talk about somebody, so-and-so, the son of so-and-so. What do you mean, so-and-so, the brother of so-and-so? So Rashi over there in the Mishnah writes that that Shimon was someone who devoted himself full-time to Torah learning, and his brother Azariah, who was wealthy, supported him in his efforts. In other words, this was an example of the, so to speak, classic Yisachar-Zvulun partnership, where Yisachar is learning and Zvulun is supporting him with his business endeavors. So instead of calling it a Yisachar-Zvulun partnership, you could call it a Shimon-Azariah partnership. Except when you sign on for such a thing, probably they won't know what you're talking about. The Rambam writes, however, that this Azariah, in other words, Azariah, the wealthy individual who financed the Torah learning of his brother Shimon, this Azariah is the father of Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah. So Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah came from a family where not only were they wealthy, but they used their wealth for Torah endeavors. They supported Torah through their wealth. That was the kind of family he was brought up in. We also get the impression from the Gemara that Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah was an incredibly talented leader in terms of his leadership qualities. The famous story which the Gemara relates over there is the following story. The Nasi, the head of the Sanhedrin, in the years following the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash was Rabbi Gamliel. For whatever reason, there were certain incidents with Rabban Gamliel where the rest of the members of the Sanhedrin, these Gedolei HaTanoim, felt that Rabban Gamliel was ruling the Sanhedrin with a little bit of too much of an iron hand. Whatever the details were exactly, it's a difficult balance when a person is in a position of power. On the one hand, if you're a doormat and you let everybody do whatever they want, you're not fulfilling your responsibility as a leader. On the other hand, if you come down too hard on people, so that's something that people can't bear either. So Rabbi Gamliel was a takif, he was a tough leader, he made decisions that he thought l'shem shamayim were the right decisions to enforce his perspective in a forceful kind of manner. But essentially there was a rebellion on the part of the other Tanoim, and they said we're going to remove Rabbi Gamliel for his post and find a replacement. Who's the replacement? So after some back and forth, they settle on Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah. So that would be significant in its own right. In other words, you know, for someone to be chosen from the bleachers, so to speak, to go and become the Nasi, the head of the Sanhedrin, just like that. I mean, obviously that in its own right points to the fact that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a person of tremendous qualities to step into the shoes of Rabbi Gamliel. But as most of us know, the story is even more remarkable than that. The Gemara says that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was all of 18 years old at the time. So again, just picture the scene. Here, Rabbi Gamliel, the head of the Sanhedrin, the senior Rav in Klal Yisrael, is removed from his position. And after an extensive search committee, the best person they can find to take Rabbi Gamliel's place is a teenager, is an 18-year-old. So obviously it points to the fact that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was no ordinary teenager. He was a person that already at the age of 18 had the tchunos hanefesh, had the personal qualities to be able to step into the role of a Nasi b'Yisrael, of somebody who was leading the Sanhedrin and someone who was leading Klal Yisrael. So we probably also know the Gemara there tells a famous story that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, after being asked to head up the Sanhedrin, says, "I have to go home and consult with my wife." So right off the bat, we see how smart a man he was. He goes home and he consults with his wife. Should I take the position? And one of the fears that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah has is that he looks like he's 18. He looks like a kid. You know, I'm going to walk in and take my place at the head of the Sanhedrin. No one's going to take me seriously. And overnight, the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had 18 locks of hair turn white in a miraculous fashion, such that when he woke up the next morning and was ready to take his position as the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, he looked like a much older man. And that, the Gemara says, is the meaning of the Mishnah at the end of the first parak of Brachos, the Mishnah which we know because it made its way into the Haggadah Shel Pesach. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer, Hare Ani Ki Ven Shivim Shana. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, "Behold, I am as if I'm 70 years old." What do you mean, "I'm as if I'm 70 years old"? I'm actually 18. I just look like I'm 70 because of this miracle that took place that enabled me to have the physical appearance to be able to step into the role of the head of the Sanhedrin. I've pointed out in the past that the miracle over here is that he started looking like he was 70 before he took the position. If he would have taken the position and been on the job for a couple of days and then looked like he was 70, even though he was 18, that would have been just a regular bederech hateva. That would have been a normal course of events and not necessarily something which would be described as miraculous. We should just point out, by the way, an interesting tidbit of information. The Rambam, in his commentary on Mishnayos at the end of the first parak of Brachos, writes that there was, as much as this was a miraculous event, that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah suddenly, went from looking like he was 18 to looking like he was 70, the Rambam says it's not entirely miraculous. The Rambam says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah worked so hard, he toiled so hard in his Torah study, that it actually took a toll on his physical health, and he looked like he was 70 even though he was 18. In other words, the transformation that took place was not just a miraculous transformation, but it showed the fact that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah worked in Torah learning to such an extent, he toiled in Torah study, such that he physically took on the appearances of a much older person. Okay, so that's the greatness of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. The Gemara goes on to say that even after the Chachamim reinstated Rabbi Gamliel, which they did a day later, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was king for a day. He was the head of the Sanhedrin for one day. Even after Rabbi Gamliel was reinstated, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah occupied a position together with Rabbi Gamliel, and they would switch off giving the major drasha on Shabbos, which was the sign of holding the office of being the Nasi of the Sanhedrin. Okay, that's a little bit about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. We'll come back, Be'ezus Hashem, in a few moments to talk about how I think Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's biography, this biography of greatness that already, and leadership qualities that were already manifest at such a young age, can shed some light on the statement which Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is going to make. So with that in mind, let's take a look at the Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer, Im ein Torah, ein derech eretz. If there's no Torah, there's no derech eretz. Im ein derech eretz, ein Torah. If there's no derech eretz, so then there's no Torah. The Mefarshim differ as to how to interpret the term derech eretz over here, much the same way that they differ in interpreting the statement at the beginning of the second parak of Pirkei Avos, Yofe Talmud Torah derech eretz, that the study of Torah goes well together with derech eretz. The two main ways you can interpret derech eretz, and they're both potential interpretations for this statement over here. Derech eretz can be understood as making a living, as a livelihood, a profession. You know, you have some way of making money. So in that sense, im ein Torah, ein derech eretz. If you're not going to learn, so then you're not going to make money. What do you mean by that? I mean, I understand in my particular case, right? I happen to be in a line of work where if I didn't learn that much, it would probably be a professional hazard. But if I'm an accountant, if I'm a doctor, what is my Torah learning have to do with my ability to make a living? So here it would seem that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is expressing, you know, what's essentially a matter of belief. The parnasa that a person makes is tied to his limud haTorah, to his learning of Torah. Main Torah, ein derech eretz. If you're not going to learn Torah, so that parnasa is not going to come to you in quite the same way. But conversely, ein derech eretz, ein Torah. If you're not going to have an occupation, if you're not going to be employed, if you're not going to have a profession, so you won't be able to learn Torah. So one gives one. One is the cause of the other. Alternatively, another way of understanding derech eretz is the way in which we use the term today. You know, roughly speaking, in the sense of a person who has good midos, who gets along with people, who has good character traits. Im ein Torah, ein derech eretz. If you don't have Torah study, so then you're not going to be a menschliche person. You're not going to be a proper person. Which already the Rishonim already asked the question. Yeah, is that really true? Right? The only people who are menschlich are the people who know how to learn. Right? You never met a person who was a mensch, who was an ignorant person. So again, there's some discussion about that, but that is a way of interpreting this line. And on the flip side, im ein derech eretz, ein Torah. If there's no menschlichkeit, so then you're not going to have Torah either. In other words, the prerequisite for being able to learn and absorb Torah is a sense of menschlichkeit. You need menschlichkeit in order to acquire Torah, but you need Torah in order to be able to acquire menschlichkeit in the proper sense of the term. Similarly, im ein chachma, ein yira. If there's no wisdom, so there's no fear of God. Im ein yira, ein chachma. If there's no fear of God, so then there's no wisdom. And again, the relationship seems to be something along the following lines. Somebody who's not wise at all doesn't have enough of an appreciation to realize that there's a God who holds us accountable for all of our actions. A person who's not a deep thinker in the slightest, a person who has a very superficial approach to thought, will not really appreciate the concept of having fear of God. But conversely, you need fear of God in order to be able to deepen and strengthen your own sense of wisdom. Similarly, im ein das, ein bina, if there's no knowledge, there's no understanding. Im ein bina, ein das, if there's no understanding, there's no knowledge. Knowledge in this case could be understood as knowledge of information, knowledge of facts. And bina is what we might call as cognitive ability, the ability to take those facts, to process them, and to be able to come to new conclusions. So you need knowledge in order to be able to develop the sense of cognitive ability. I mean, if you don't know anything, if you sit around and try to develop your ability to think, you have no raw material with which to think. But on the other hand, if you know you're not going to engage in that cognitive ability, you're not going to be able to discover new facts. You need a methodology, a way of looking at the information that you have in order to learn new information. Finally, im ein kemach, ein Torah. If there's no flour, there's no Torah. Im ein Torah in Kemach, if there's no Torah, so then there's no flour. One way to interpret this is similar to one interpretation we had before about the relationship between Torah and Derech Eretz. If we interpret Derech Eretz as meaning a livelihood or an occupation, so on the one hand, you need Torah in order to spiritually merit to have Parnassah come into your life. On the other hand, if you don't have Parnassah, so then you don't have the wherewithal to really be able to sit and learn. So it's a symbiotic relationship, if one will, between these two parts. In a general sense, the Mefarshim are troubled by the formulation that Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah has over here. Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah has four couplets in which he basically says that if you don't have A, you can't have B, and if you don't have B, you can't have A. And the Mefarshim are troubled by the logic in each of these statements, leaving aside the specific content of each of the statements, but the logic seems circular. In other words, if A is a prerequisite for B, so how can you say that B is a prerequisite for A? The logic doesn't seem to follow. What Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah seems to be saying is, I need to do X before I can do Y, but I need to do Y before I can do X. That's a logical contradiction. I mean, it's how are you able to, you know, need to do one thing before you do the other, but at the same time, need to do it in the reverse. So the two essential approaches in the Mefarshim to understanding this Mishnah. One is to reinterpret in each of these couplets what the words mean. So in other words, to take an example, we say, Im ein yira ein chachma, im ein chachma ein yira. So if you understand that in both parts of the phrase, chachma and yira mean the same thing, so you're right, I kind of run into a logical issue over here. I need chachma to gain yira, I need yira to gain chachma. So I'm not, I can't get anywhere, you know, so there's no logical place to start. It's a, you know, it's a conundrum. But if we understand that there are different types of yira, or for that matter, different types of chachma, which we certainly do believe that there are, there's a yira, there's a kind of fear that Hashem will punish me if I do the wrong thing, and then there's a yira saromimus, there's a fear or a reverence for God's grandeur and greatness. So I need a basic level of fear in order to achieve some kind of wisdom. And once I have that kind of wisdom, I can perhaps achieve the higher type of fear, of reverence, the yiras haromimus, the awe and the reverence that comes with recognizing the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If I take that approach in interpreting all of these different phrases, so it's not really a catch-22, because the yira in the first phrase is not the yira in the second phrase, and again, you can take a similar approach with each of the different phrases that are here. The approach I'd like to share tonight, however, is an approach that, I'll quote the Maram Shif, the Maram Shik rather, the preeminent Talmud of the Chassam Sofer, and his comments on Pirkei Avos, but it's said before the Maram Shik as well. The Maram Shik, in his comments on this Mishnah, says, what Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah is telling us is that, as we said before, there is a symbiotic relationship between all of these different types of concepts. You need Chachma for Yira, you need Yira for Chachma. You need Torah for Kemach, you need Kemach for Torah. You need Bina for Das, you need Das for Bina. And as the Maram Shik puts it in his comments, Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah is saying that each of these concepts is like pearls on a string. If you break the string, all of the pearls are going to fall. It's not like A is a prerequisite for B. The point that Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah is saying is that all of these items have to coexist with one another in order to have a complete existence. And if you remove any of these items, you're going to, by definition, remove all of these items. It's an all or nothing deal. Again, the mashal of the Maram Shik, they're like pearls on a string. You break the string, all of the pearls are going to fall. We need to work out a system in which all of these concepts are going to work together. Otherwise, things are simply not going to work. think one can make the suggestion that this approach, if we understand the Mishnah like the Maharam Shik, that the point Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is bringing out is that there's certain concepts in life that need to coexist in order for them to work. I think one can argue that this approach is uniquely tied to the biography of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So let me explain. As we said before, the Gemara in Brachos says that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah served as the Nasi of the Sanhedrin for exactly one day. He had a one-day tenure. Right? He was the king of the Sanhedrin for a day. But in that day, it was quite a day. The Gemara says in Brachos that day on which Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was appointed to be the Nasi of the Sanhedrin was referred to thereafter in rabbinic literature as Oso Hayom. That day, it was such a memorable day. So many things happened on that day that, you know, nobody ever forgot that day. What was one of the things that happened on that day? So the Gemara relates that the admissions policy into the Beis Medrash changed. That Rabbi Gamliel took the position that the only people who were allowed into the Beis Medrash to learn were people who were tocho kibaro, people who were pure-hearted. The way they were on the outside were the same way they were on the inside. No hypocrites, no fakers, you know, no people putting on airs or pretensions. The only people who were allowed into the Beis Medrash were people who were absolutely genuine in the fullest sense of the term. And Rabbi Gamliel put a guard at the Beis Medrash to turn away those who were not absolutely genuine. Parenthetically, the later Mefarshim asked the question, how did the guard figure it out? Right? It's almost like a logic problem. You know, you ask the guy at the door, pardon me, sir, but are you a genuine person? Right? So how are you supposed to answer that question? Right? So one of the answers that's given is that if you were really a genuine person, you'd figure out a way past the guard. In other words, that was the test. The test was, do you care enough about coming to the Beis Medrash that you'll figure out a way to get around the guard? If you're such a person, so that means that you're a genuine person. You're tocho kibaro. If you don't care enough, you know, okay, there's a guard there, so okay, I guess I'll try something else. Maybe I'll go bowling tonight as opposed to going to the Beis Medrash. Right? The genuine person would figure out a way to get past the guard no matter what. Whatever the story is, Rabbi Gamliel had the system to eliminate non-genuine people from coming into the Beis Medrash. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah took away the guard and allowed anyone who wanted to learn to come into the Beis Medrash. You don't have to prove that you're genuine in some way. And the Gemara says that hundreds of new Talmidim joined the Beis Medrash on that one day that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was appointed to be the Nasi, was appointed to be the head of the Sanhedrin. What was the point of contention between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? Obviously, each of them wasn't just acting on an emotional basis. Each of them had a shita. They had a perspective as to how Torah should be taught to people. So I think one, on a certain level, you can appreciate the perspective of Rabbi Gamliel. You know, Torah is not a plaything. Torah is not a hobby. Torah is serious stuff. If you're not a genuine person, you want to come to the Beis Medrash just to kind of fool around and, you know, to dabble in Torah, this is not for you. We understand that perspective. I think Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's retort to that might have been, life is more complicated than that, and people are more complicated than that. I'm not sure that you can just divide people neatly into genuine and non-genuine. There are a lot of shades of gray in the middle. There are people who on some level want to do the Ratzon Hashem, they want to do the right thing, but they're struggling. It depends it depends what time of day you talk to them. Are they genuine? Are they not genuine? Sometimes they're a little bit more, sometimes they're a little bit less. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, look, life is complicated, people are complicated, and being that that's the case, even somebody who perhaps doesn't meet the high standards of Rabbi Gamliel, I can see the spark of goodness, of genuineness in that person, and I think it's kedai, it's worthwhile to let such a person into the Beis Medrash. What does that have to do with our Mishnah? So perhaps one can argue that the very point Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is bringing out in our Mishnah is this point that life is complicated, and there isn't always a clear answer to what takes precedence over what. So, for instance, take the example of Torah and Derech Eretz. Let's imagine for a moment, let's take the position that Derech Eretz means finding an occupation, finding a livelihood. So, we go to a person and we ask him, what's more important, learning Torah or making money? So, you know, a very crass person might say, making money is more important than learning Torah. But if you're not such a crass person, you know, you'll say, okay, I think it's much more important to learn Torah than to make money. Okay, so let's follow that through. So you shouldn't take a job or ever in your lifetime or ever have any source of support, and you should just learn. And not so fast, that's not going to work. But I thought you told me that learning was more important than making money. So the answer is, well, it depends. In other words, it's important to learn Torah. It's important to learn to make money. It's necessary to make money. And somehow in life, we have to strike a balance between the two so that we can learn Torah and not neglect our obligations towards Torah, but at the same time, not get ourselves into a situation where we're impoverished. Frankly, it's a juggling act, as I think we all know, in one way or another in our lives. You know, it's not always as simple as, you know, it just comes down to this value versus that value. Values are interdependent. And the complexity of life is such that you have to kind of make it work. And there isn't always a good answer to which value takes precedence over the other value. Imein Torah ein derech eretz, imein derech eretz ein Torah. Right? Sometimes we have to balance these competing values and figure out in a messy kind of way which one takes precedence in a given situation. That, I think, perhaps is the message of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. There are a lot of good things out there in life, and they all need to coexist in order for life to work, because life is complicated, life is not simple. Like the mashal of the Maharam Shik, life is like a string of pearls. You need all the pearls on the string. And if you cut the string and try to separate the pearls out one from another, you're going to lose all the pearls. The only way that you keep the string together is to incorporate all of the pearls into your religious understanding. Such a person, like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who understood the complexities of life and that there are a lot of grays in the middle, it's not all black and white, he understood that the person who's not ostensibly Tocho Kivaro, he's not such a genuine person on the surface, also has his place in the Beis Medrash and also deserves to be there. He's a complex person, but life is also complex, and that person has a right and an obligation to come and learn Torah together with everybody else. Mechna ben Akasha Omer, Ratzah HaKadosh